football on Off the Ball.
You know, what he did for the club, he changed the trajectory of it completely. But Thomas Frank, I'm loving the Thomas Frank era. I'm having a great time.
You were sceptical initially.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You're welcome back. Now, I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by world bronze medalist Grainne Walsh, who secured a spot on the podium at the World Boxing Championships in Liverpool last weekend. Grainne, welcome to the show. How are you keeping?
Thanks for having me on. I'm great. I'm still trying to find my feet after a mad 10 days over in Liverpool. But yeah, I'm sitting here as a medalist now and I'm absolutely delighted with myself. So yeah.
I presume part of coming to terms with it is actually just letting the body rest and just to sit down for a bit. Four fights in the space of a week is a fairly taxing way that is actually allowing you to get to this joyous moment in your career.
Yeah, it's tough. Like that's high level sport though. Like everyone is carrying some sort of knocks and bumps along the way, and four fights in a week is definitely not an easy task, but I'm delighted that I have that experience now. I think from boxing at the qualifiers last year in Bangkok when I had four in the space of a week as well, that really stood to me for the Worlds this year. It's been a very up and down year. We've not had a lot of activity and stuff, but delighted now with four more fights under my belt and we're gearing up towards a big 2026, hopefully.
The fight that saw you secure the medal to the quarterfinal against China's Yang Liu, she had won silver in Paris. It is an unbelievable fight, really. It's a split decision 3-2 that goes your way. What goes through your mind between the end of the fight and the realisation that you have won?
God, I've been in that situation so many times where I've been on the opposite end of a 3-2 decision. And like when you have a world medal on the line, of course, the fights are going to be super competitive. And especially when you're up against a world class operator like that Chinese girl, like I was just so thankful that I actually sparred her when we were in Beijing in February. And I had that kind of experience with her before actually fighting her. But yeah, like there's no easy fights when you go to a world championships. Like everyone is, you know, looking at the biggest prize, which is the gold medal. And although I would have loved to come home with the gold, I lost to the eventual gold medalist. So I'm proud of the achievement. And just looking forward to seeing what the future holds now.
Sparring her in Beijing earlier this year, does that break down an element of mystique around an Olympic medalist? Or did you always believe you had her number?
See, it's hard to know really until you get in with them. I do believe that on my day, anyone would struggle to beat me. Like, I really do believe that. But I think before I sparred her, I kind of did have her on a bit of a pedestal. And she had beaten so many amazing people. She has such a massive medal tally. And like all the years that I was injured, she was flat out winning medals at all the major tournaments. So I think I maybe had a little that all of us struggle with that imposter syndrome. So having the experience of actually sparring her in Beijing stood to me massively. Like I went into those world championships not fearing drawing anybody. And there's not too many times that I'm actually that confident in my own ability. So I think the older I'm getting, the more confident I'm getting and the more belief that I have that on my day, I can beat anybody.
What's the psychological battle like after you get that win? Because you then need to get yourself down and ready for a semi-final, because in isolation, it's the best moment of your career. And then there's also the carrot of having an even better moment not long afterwards.
Yeah, that's the thing. When it's all in consecutive days, it's kind of hard to deal with all the emotions. But I think for me, the biggest thing is not being on social media. Like
right.
I used to, like years ago in my career, I used to love reading all the articles and reading all the amazing things that people were saying about me. But that was just my ego. And I feel like that's great when I've achieved and I can look back on social media and like people have been so lovely and sending such amazing messages, but it can be a distraction, especially like just for me personally. So I try to stay away from all that until after the competition. And when you're in that competitive environment, you're nearly just living the same day over and over. Like I fought, I had a day off, making weight again to fight again the next day. And that kind of time just stops when you're in competition, to be honest, until it's all over. And then you end up picking up loads of bugs and everything. The body is crazy what it can do. It just holds you together for the duration of the competition. And as soon as you stop, you just end up picking up bugs and stuff as well. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot in that. I'll come back to the social media thing in a minute. But like the thing that I always find extraordinary about amateur fighters compared to professional fighters is that professionals have to make weight once every few months, whereas you guys have to do it multiple times in the space of a week. What's that experience like for you? Are you easily making it? Is it a daily struggle for you in competition?
No, I think you make it as easy or as difficult for yourself as, you know, like it's up to you really. Like I feel like for the 6 weeks before the Worlds, I was bringing my weight down slowly and like being really consistent. Whereas there's times where I've had to do those 2 week fad diets and then it's really hard to keep the weight off. You end up just ballooning back up really quick. And I think that's why a lot of the pros do have such dramatic weight cuts, because they have a 36 hour window from the time they weigh in to the time they fight. And then they could have 3 or 4 months off. Whereas for amateurs, I made weight four out of 7 days. But it actually gets easier the more you make it, because your body just gets used to it. Like it's usually harder the first time, but no, everything went well and I did it right. And I have to credit my nutritionist in Dublin as well, Sharon Madigan. Big shout out to her, because she's at my beck and call anytime I'm struggling with the weight or anything. So you just make it as easy or as hard for yourself as you can.
And then on the social media point, at what stage after last weekend do you re-engage with social media? Because I presume you've been on it for the last week. You know, you've got to take the plaudits at some stage.
Yeah, no, I when I'm out of the competition and I don't mind the distraction or whatever, but it's when you're in competition. If I logged in after that Chinese fight, like I would not have slept a wink. I found it hard enough to sleep, like you were saying, trying to come back down to earth after that feeling. But like, you know, I got loads of lovely messages on WhatsApp and people messaging my actual number, and I do respond to those, but there's not that many people that have those. But it's on Instagram and all that sort of stuff that I would end up just scrolling all night. And I think the night after then, it was the Friday that I fought and lost, I did log in that night, but sure, there wasn't much sleep got then after that. So yeah, but like it is nice to get the plaudits as well when you do bring home the silverware. So, and I'm very grateful for the support that people have shown me.
Is that something that you've explored over the last couple of years, or is it just a fairly obvious thing to yourself that I need to switch this off because I'm not sleeping properly, or this is not helping me and my mental game at all? Like I'm wondering how quick or otherwise a process that was.
Yeah, it actually wasn't from that kind of problem. It was actually a coping mechanism when I was injured that I figured out that was a tool that I could use, because like I remember when I was injured and all the girls were going to Tokyo and I was on that kind of same path, and then I didn't make it to Tokyo because of injury. I found it really difficult to deal with looking at everyone else living the dream that I thought I would be in. And that was what was triggering me. So as soon as I sat back and actually realized like what are actually triggering these negative emotions in me, social media was a massive part of that. So slowly but surely, I just limited my exposure to that. And then going to different tournaments and stuff, I seen that was where I was triggering, like I was putting a lot of my attention on social media when it shouldn't have been on that. So yeah, it's just been a bit of trial and error. It's not something that I ever read in a book or anything like that. It's just been something that's worked really well for me. But what works for one doesn't work for everyone. So
what else has changed for you over the last little while? Because like you've had so many setbacks, so many comebacks throughout your career, and there's still, you know, a huge runway in front of you to achieve greater things over the next couple of years as well. So I'm sure you're accumulating these lessons and trying to be the best version of yourself that you can. But like you mentioned Tokyo there, that could be the starting point for this conversation of setbacks and recovery. Mm-hmm. You could use Paris as the starting point. You could use March this year as the starting point of the World Championships that you had in March. And let's say the dodgy decision that cost you progression in that championship. So I'm not actually sure where to start with this conversation, Grainne, as to like where your growth actually begins.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a book in me anyway at some stage, because I've had that many setbacks and stuff. But I was only saying to someone recently, like, the path that I've chosen to go down this whole boxing route, like the things that I have learned throughout the years are just, I've learned invaluable life lessons. And you know, the resilience that I've built up. I'm a complete, like, boxing has made me the person that I am now. And I don't know what I would be like as a human being if I didn't have boxing and all the lessons that it's taught me. And although the setbacks at the time were so soul destroying, they really were, but they were lessons to show me that like the timing wasn't right for me, or showing me some other path. And I am grateful for every setback now. If you had asked me this when I was on my fifth hand injury, I would have told you a very different story. But yeah, I just think like even bad decisions, like last year, you look at Milan, the first Olympic qualifier, the first world qualifier, when I got a bad decision there, I thought that was the end of the world. But I got to experience then the positivity in Bangkok and like have my family members and stuff there. So hindsight is a great thing. But yeah, I don't know. I just keep wanting to go back for more. I just don't feel like I fulfilled my potential yet. And I think that's what probably gets me out of bed in the morning and keeps me driven.
Did you change much since March this year then? Have you used the shortest window between these two things?
Yeah, a lot has changed in like within the IABA. We've moved from IBA to World Boxing. That's been a massive thing for us. We have a new performance director, John Mackey, and like he's made such amazing changes as well in his short time. So things are always evolving, always changing. But yeah, personally, I went into those World Championships not with any expectation of myself of, you know, I always expect a lot from myself, but not necessarily on a particular outcome. I wanted to go into those World Championships and approach it from a point of view of enjoyment. And I feel like that's why we get into the sport in the first place. And I'm living my dream, so why not enjoy that? I sometimes feel like I wish away those moments that I trained so hard for. And that's what I might regret when I look back on my career when I finish. So I want to try and embrace every challenge and be as present as I possibly can. That was definitely something that walking to the ring, I was saying to my coach, Damien Kennedy, he reminded me to be present because those moments are precious and I don't want to wish those moments away.
So you're giving your coach instructions on what to say to you, basically.
Well, yeah, like in those really nerve-wracking parts, I'm repeating myself a million times from a place of needing reassurance nearly. Like it's those feelings when you're walking to the ring are no one can describe them unless you've actually felt them yourself. But yeah, trying to just keep me in the moment and enjoy the moment because, you know, it is hard to enjoy it when you're in that nerve-wracking space. But that feeling afterwards is just one of pure and utter, you know, thrill. So that's what keeps me going back for more.
For people who haven't experienced that moment, which is 99.9% of people listening to this, we will all say that must be a really, really hard thing to do because the nature of the sport is one thing, but also the huge pressure that's on you, particularly at these championships. How do you manage to keep yourself present and to push yourself into a space of enjoying what's about to happen as opposed to being daunted by it?
Yeah, it's a work in progress. It's definitely something that I'm still trying to conquer myself. But I think by trying to repeat to myself that like I am where I'm meant to be, and I got a little bit of an injury scare in the Sheffield camp before I went to the Worlds, and I had to get a scan on my hand. And I was just thinking, if the outcome of that scan had been different and I wasn't allowed to go to the Worlds, I would have given anything in my power to be there. So I nearly used that as like a reverse psychology to be like, my God, if that had come back as bad news, I would have done nothing to be here. So when I'm actually in that place where it's out of the comfort zone, let's be honest, walking to the ring is not a comfortable place, but that's where real growth and you know, you really grow as a human being and I don't know. It's hard to sum it up in words, but yeah, that is really what shapes you, I think.
Yeah, and I guess the worst sort of heartbreak is not being able to take part at all, which you've had plenty of experience of, like the unbelievably bad luck you've had with injuries. So to actually have a clean bill of health for a major championships, maybe that helps push your mind into a very positive mindset because I guess you've experienced the other side of that coin.
Exactly. Like there's the amount of times that I watched tournaments online that I could have been at and should have been at but wasn't at them because of injury and whatever, like, and I would have given anything. And I think all the injuries have given me a massive sense of appreciation for what I do, because I will admit I took it for granted when I was younger, and it is easy when you're younger and you're kind of naive to take all those things for granted. But when I actually had to sit on the sidelines and look at all the things that I was missing out on, that was a huge lesson for me to think, like, if I get to hold that in my hand again, I'm not going to let it go. And I was essentially one punch away from retirement. And the surgeon in Belfast, Michael Ames, a huge shout out. Like, he was the man who saved my career. So they are definitely the things that I look back on when I'm allowed to actually compete. Oh, sorry. When I'm actually allowed to compete, that I'm just so grateful to be in the position that I'm in. So long may it last.
The one punch away from retirement, when was that?
That was in 2022. So that was after my fourth hand operation. So I had four injuries on the exact same, like the four scars are on the same line.
Yes.
And then I actually broke my thumb. So I thought that was me retired, but I didn't need surgery on the last one. And that was kind of like, I'm still on that last life. So long may it last, as I said. But yeah, it's been some journey.
Yeah, I knew about the repetitive injury on the one hand. Were you told by the surgeon that one more bang would have actually...
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because he said to me, like, I can't keep just operating on this every time you throw a punch. Like, your hand health is more important than this if it's going to be something that affects you in the long run. And that was a very uncomfortable situation for me to be in, and a very uncomfortable conversation for him to have to say that to me. I was 26 at the time, had so much left to achieve and hadn't been to the Olympics. So that was something that always kind of, you know, loomed in the back of my mind, that I hadn't actually got to the Olympics yet. So that was genuinely what he said, was that one punch away from retirement. And yeah, I'm still on that last life now. So I'm always touching wood and waving at magpies and everything, trying to keep that luck on my side.
It's I have to find it's a bit of a bleak question, but do you think long term about your own health and the relationship with the sport? I guess in the amateur game, it's not the pros, and like you're, I guess, a bit more open to it when you're a professional fighter. Maybe the dangers aren't the same, but it's still not the safest sport in the world. It's just that you bring up the hand there and the multiple surgeries. Can you allow that to seep into your thinking, or do you just have to plow on because it's going to allow you to think about things that a professional athlete simply can't?
Yeah, I suppose I try not to think too much about the future. I'm trying to focus on being in that present moment. And realistically, tomorrow is promised to nobody. So I'm trying to just, like I said, be the best version of myself every day that I can, be grateful for what I'm doing now, and hopefully that I'm not putting too many miles on the clock with getting hit to the head and all that. But I don't really think too much about that. Like, the only thing I think about is the fact that when I do retire, you know, I know I will miss boxing for the rest of my life when I'm no longer able to do it. So while I'm able to do it, I just want to be as present as I can.
Did you visualise any of the moments last weekend? Like, I don't know, is it a moment on the podium? Is it getting a win that actually ensures your title as a global medalist? Like, you said that you don't really set, I don't know, specific targets, or you don't visualise specific things in your head, but are there more general things that you would have thought about in your brain before last week's competition?
Yeah, it's more, my dad actually came up with this mad idea there before Paris, or before the qualifiers last year, about visualising my best bits of me at my best in the ring against whatever opponent it may be. And that comes back to the whole thing of being the best version of me, because regardless of who I'm up against, like, I'm just in a battle, me versus me, realistically. And that's what I try to visualise, is me being positive in the ring, doing my best bits that I've trained so hard to do. And that's the thing, we train so hard that it all is actually just muscle memory and being able to bring that to the ring on the day. And then obviously I visualise my hand getting raised. And it's mad though, when I visualise those kind of things, I really do feel it on a very emotional level. Like, there's times where I've shed tears of just literally seeing my hand being raised in moments like that Chinese fight, and you could see the outpour of pure emotion when I did get my hand raised, because I knew that that meant I was on the podium. So, but I didn't settle. I remember in 2019 at the European Games, I had settled for bronze in that instance, whereas I was eager not to make that mistake again this time. I wasn't settling for a bronze medal this time. I really did fight my heart out for the silver and for the gold, but it just wasn't meant to be on this occasion. But it's a massive step forward for me, because it's been many years with all the setbacks and everything since I've stood on a podium and my first time at a world championship. So I am very proud.
When you say there are tears in your eyes when you visualise your hand being raised against the Chinese fighter, is that pre-fight? Is that between rounds, or when
does
that happen?
It's pre-fight. Yeah. That could be just, like, I was on the plane over to Liverpool and I was literally tearing up seeing my hand being raised in a big moment. It's not a, because you don't know the draw at that stage, so I don't know who I could be up against, but it's just visualising me at my best. And that's why I try not to focus too much on other people or other things that are going on. I just try to focus on me and being the best version of myself.
Why do you think that works for you?
I don't know. Like, people always say, focus on what you can control and control the controllables and all that. Like, I am only in control of what I do. Like, I can't control what anyone else does around me, or, you know, people have, you know, or whether I'm in red or in blue, or, you know, there's all these different factors. Now, in competition, I'm extremely superstitious. Outside of competition, I'm not. And people were asking me in the lead up, like, are you superstitious? And I was like, nah, not really. But then when I'm in competition, I turn into a very superstitious about certain things. Like,
how so?
Like, even coming back from the weigh-in, like one of the coaches on the way back from one of the weigh-ins was like, will we go the shortcut? And I hadn't got the shortcut any other day. So I was like, no, we'll go the long way. Like, just like stupid little things, but things that just make me a little bit more at ease, because there's so many things that go through your head on a fight day, and it's trying to kill the time before the time you weigh in to the time that you fight. A lot of people are able to go back to sleep and nap during the day. I can't. Once I'm awake, I'm awake. Like, I'm just ready for the day and fueling up for the fight. But it affects people in different ways, but I'm more superstitious than I thought, that's for sure.
Also, to go back to that point, the psychological tip from your dad, it sounds like he could be a decent psychologist if he put his mind to it.
Yeah, my God, my dad is like, he gets these little nuggets of gold from somewhere. I don't know where, but like, he's not a boxing man, but anything that he says ends up being like so accurate. So the trust I have with my dad is unreal. Like, we have such a close relationship, and any advice that he gives me, whether I like it or not at the time, he ends up being right in the end. So I try to listen to his advice as much as I can.
Gráinne, the story is well told, obviously, of your own football background. Was there boxing in the family? You say your dad's not a boxing man, but was there boxing anywhere else in the family?
Not a bit. It's the weirdest thing. Like, most people get into boxing because their dads and their uncles, and there's a long list of boxers in the family. But no, there's actually none in my family. I only got into it because I was obsessed with Katie Taylor, and she was preparing to go to the London Olympics. And obviously, as a young girl in sport, like, I was playing soccer, as you said, and she came from a soccer background, and I just wanted to copy her, to be honest. And then that's the influence that a coach can make, because when I went over to my club here in Spartacus Boxing Club in Tullamore, when I went over there and I met the coach, Dima, like, that was it. Once I met him, we just had, he just seen something in me that I never really seen in myself. And I was forever trying to, like, impress him and please him and stuff. So, he's been a massive influential figure, like almost like a second dad in many ways in my career. So I have to say a massive shout out to him.
What age were you when you walked in there?
I was 16. Okay. So I was kind of older too, because like a lot of people were getting into boxing from 7 and 8 years of age, but I was a little bit late to the party. But I think from being in sport, being in soccer and stuff, I always had a high drive, and individual sport nearly suited me more, because whatever I wanted to put into it, I would essentially get out of it. So I don't regret my decision, obviously, now. But
it must feel pretty nice, Gráinne, to finally be getting out of it what you put into it, because you put in so much for so long, and the sport hasn't exactly loved you back.
That's the thing. People always say that about boxing. You can love boxing as much as you want, it will never love you back. But I don't know what it is. Like, once you get the bug for boxing, it's, you know, you kind of have it for life. And like you said, like, I'm 14 years chasing this and like never gave up. I had every reason under the sun to give up. And geez, there was every sign steering me the opposite way from where I was going. But I'm glad I never did, because the resilience that I've gained throughout the years and the memories that I've made, like, they're the special things that I look back on. Medals are brilliant, don't get me wrong. But like, they are the things that gather dust. It's the memories that you make, like being able to go to Paris last year and share all those memories with my family, having some of them in Bangkok, having them in Liverpool there last year. Like, they're the things that we've experienced as a family that, like, I will never forget.
Did you manage to soak all of that in then last week?
Yeah, sure. Look, seeing them in the crowd and stuff. And then my younger brother came home from Vancouver. Like, he wasn't planning on coming home. And then when I beat the Chinese, he was like, oh, I have to come home. And I only seen him in the crowd after I fought against the Kazakh. So, like, those things as well, like, they're the real things that, you know, money can't buy.
How do you celebrate a global medal?
It's been a bit wild. The last 2 days, believe it or not, I've been at the Plowin.
Okay, right.
A ton of more. So, no, I was there. My dad has a stand there, so I was just there saying hello to a few people. But yeah, catching up on some calories anyway, that's for sure. And then myself and my partner, Anna, she's only home from the World Cup, actually, the other day as well. So we're going to Croatia on Sunday. So, it's like, you know, just wanted to get away in the sun for a few days. And it's not often that our schedules align. So we're gonna jump on that while we can.
This is Anna McGann, your partner. Did you watch on Sunday and feel the level of anger that the whole country felt on Sunday watching?
I did. Oh my God. After the first half, even I was like, oh my God, they're going to run away with it. But just to come that close, like, and I was hoping, I was like, all you have to do is make the semi-final and then I'll actually be able to go to the one of the games, because it's been hard. The two of us have been in the UK, but neither of us have actually been able to be there to support each other. And it was so close to getting to the semi-final, but it just wasn't meant to be on this occasion. But I'm just so proud of her as well. She's had such a journey too. And yeah, it's been amazing to watch her in the last couple of weeks.
It kind of feels like they're on an upward trajectory sports-wise as well, this women's rugby team. And okay, I'm trying to draw parallels here, but I mean, Irish boxing behind the scenes and global boxing at an amateur level hasn't exactly been run spectacularly well over the last couple of years, but we're kind of coming out of that. You're obviously succeeding right now. Irish women's rugby has obviously not been treated with the utmost of respect over the last couple of years. They're coming out of that right now. So
yeah,
you must both be pretty excited for your immediate futures.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. It's, you know, off the back of a big competition, obviously, everyone's asking what's next. Like, you don't really know. I these couple of days you're in a bit of a kind of a lull, almost like a fog. But we're going to take a bit of time away, go on holidays, and then we'll reassess what happens after this. But obviously, the World Cup was a massive build-up. Like, that's every 4 years, so it's a huge thing. So even the come-down from that as well, it's nice that we have each other to kind of lean on in that sense. But yeah, we're both excited for what's to come in the future for each other and individually as well. So we'll be each other's biggest support, that's for sure.
What are you visualising next? What's when you're on that plane home from Croatia and you're sick of the holidays and you're like, I am ready to get back in the gym, what are you going to be picturing?
Well, it'll depend what the rest of the year kind of looks like. We're actually due back in 2 weeks' time, so we don't have that much time off, but it's kind of a good thing too, because I've gained such momentum now with those 4 fights in a week that I don't want to lose that. It's important to take a break, and I do believe that is definitely important, but I will be eager to get back stuck into it as well. And the amount of things that I've learned in those 4 fights, I've seen where my strengths are, I've seen where my weaknesses are, and I'm looking forward to correcting the little mistakes that I made and building on the momentum that I've gained. So there's definitely exciting things ahead. Not too sure what that's looking like now, but I think January will be when it all kicks off, and it's going to be a busy 2026, we're hoping.
Brilliant. Grainne, it's been great chatting to you. Congratulations. It's fantastic to see somebody finally get what they deserve after years of hard work and a brilliant showing as well over the last couple of years as well. So good luck with everything that comes next and enjoy the break.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Cheers. That's Grainne Walsh on the line. We'll take a quick break.